As a TA, you'll be asked to make a lot of decisions. You may not think about decisions as being a major part of your job, but to me, decisions are a major part of any educated job. That's why we need you to be educated to do it. Some of these will be directly related to how do you explain things and so on, but others might include things like how much partial credit to give, or how much help to give a particular student, or how detailed to make your explanations, or who to recommend as a new TA, and so on. Many decisions about individuals in one way or another. How do you go about making decisions? Well, the problem with making any one of these decisions is that they depend on a great many different criteria. For example, in deciding how much help to give somebody, you might want to know, are they making progress? Are they making enough progress to deserve that? Do they seem earnest, or are they fishing for answers? Do they seem to be sort of looking for help or for answers in general, right? What's their motivation? All of these things will weigh in to some degree, because if somebody seems to be fishing for answers or only want to know the solution or not be properly motivated, you might think more about what kind of help you're giving them. Okay? And there will be many such decisions. Note, though, that I have listed more than three ideas here. And that's important because, if you remember our understanding of the brain, our working memory can hold about three ideas at a time. And we need to make a decision that depends on more than three inputs. We're going to have to trust our subconscious to compress that idea down for us using various schemata. A simple way of thinking about these schemata is that we will have a schemata for each of the basic pieces that we're trying to help to understand our decision, right? So I have some schemata that measures how earnest they are in what they're doing, and some schemata that tries to evaluate their motivation, and some schemata that tries to measure are they making progress, and so forth. And each of those schemata is going to provide a signal in. Now, all of those are still too many for our brain to handle, so effectively there's going to be some sort of weighted averaging. Positive and negative signals are going to come in, we're going to weigh them all out, and we're going to come up with what we're going to think of as sort of being an instinct. This gut feeling, this schemata motivated subconscious desire that says, I should help this person more, they deserve my aid. This person is needs to, I need to slow down and make sure they're really engaged. This person is fishing and, or trying to get a rise out of me, right? We'll get these broad views based on many different signals to help us make decisions. So, this is fine. This helps us make decisions. There's nothing wrong with this, but we're going to get with something wrong that comes out of this. To get there, however, we're going to need to take a brief aside and talk about the idea of an estimator. How does our brain go about measuring any one of those things? Let's consider, for the example, we're trying to measure how engaged they are. Are they paying attention in an engaged fashion, or are they distracted and just waiting for us to tell them something? Okay? I can't tell if they're engaged directly, but I'm going to make an estimator of engagement, an estimator of whatever I'm handling. And what I mean by an estimator is they're going to be some kind of signal that I can measure, something I can see or sense. And there's also, of course, going to be the truth. How engaged are they? How engaged do they look? A perfect estimator would have the characteristic that if somebody is 80% engaged, the estimator will say, ah, they are 80% engaged. That's what we would ideally like, but we almost never get a perfect estimator. Usually, instead, we look for a fair estimator. A fair estimator might estimate in a somewhat random fashion. There's going to be some noise in the results, but they're going to average to perfect. The number of times and the distance by which we overestimate versus underestimate is going to be equal. So that on average, this is a fair estimator. Okay? We're not over or underestimating based on the available signal. Now, not all estimators need to be fair. I could have a signal, for example, that is usually underestimating. When the signal says that they are fit or overestimating, right? When that signal says they're 50% engaged, they're actually only 30% engaged. Okay, so I'm guessing they are more engaged than they are. Or similarly, I can have an underestimator, where the signal says they're only 30% engaged, but they're really 60 or the like. So not all estimators are fair, and we call these ones that aren't fair biased. This is a technical term. Fair and biased are technical terms when we're thinking about estimators. They've been used in more broad spaces in sort of a social, fuzzy way, colloquially, but technically we mean simply this idea of, is the error averaging to zero, or is the error averaging in one direction or another? Now, how does our brain make estimators? The basic concept behind our brain's estimators is it wants to measure something big, like how engaged they are, and it's going to measure it based on a bunch of other smaller schemata. They're going to try to measure other things, like are they happy and are they looking at me and so forth. And each of those will be based on other schema, right? We're going to have this big system networking together many signals to try to create an estimator, hopefully a fair estimator. However, we don't always get fair estimators. There are two major sources of bias, this technical kind of bias, this error in one direction or another, that we need to consider as we're thinking about the estimators that are caused by the schemata of our brain. One is our skill. Okay, so let's consider one of the signals that I might think about when measuring how engaged somebody is their facial expressions. I expect when I say something surprising, people look surprised. When I say something insightful, people look like, ah, I get it, right? I expect some kind of signal, reaction to what I am doing. And if I don't see that, or it doesn't match my expectation, I think they're less engaged or less understanding. However, how did I learn to interpret facial expressions? Partly, I'm better at interpreting facial expressions of faces that look like I'm expecting. So faces I see a lot, I understand their complexion, I understand how blood comes and goes and how that manifests in the visual effect. I understand how different motions of their eyebrows and so forth will reflect in what I can see. I'm better able to interpret those because I spent more time interpreting them. And there's a cultural connotation. In some cultures, looking somebody in the eye means that you're paying attention. In some cultures, it means that you're affront to them, trying to challenge them, and so forth. There's a lot of these cultural estimations in here. So people in cultures I am used to, and cultures I belong to, and people whose faces are physically similar to faces I see a lot, I will think are more engaged. This will create a bias. I will estimate people's engagement more based on how similar they are to cultures and biology that I'm used to seeing. So this is one form. Another one that we'll see a lot is our brains are not good at measuring how good something is. If it's a good idea or a bad idea, good at something, bad at something, but they are good at measuring if something is expected. Now, this is actually a very useful approximation in many contexts, right? If I am driving along the road and I see something in the road and my brain is surprised by its signal, even if I have no idea what it is, simply the fact my brain was surprised is a good sign that this is not something to go at, right? It's an accurate signal, an accurate estimator in many contexts that good things are expected. Expected things are good things, unexpected things are bad things. But what this is not limited to simply making decisions like, should I drive over that in my car? Should I be worried about dodging it and so forth? This is going to also have the idea of a good or bad student. What does a student look like? My brain has seen a lot of students. It has learned to expect something from student appearance. And so when somebody doesn't look like my brain has learned to expect a student to look like, it's going to say, ah, that was an unexpected look for a student, therefore they probably are a bad student. I don't want this signal. There's no reason to believe appearance is related to good students. My brain is so used to applying this system, it'll do it all over the place. It will also look a lot for similar. So if you happen to look like somebody I have known in the past who had a particular characteristic, or somebody that resembles somebody I've seen in television or movies or other pictures or the like, if you have some resemblance to somebody with a strong characteristic, my subconscious is going to expect you to manifest that characteristic as well. Okay? All of these are going to bias my estimates based on things that are not related to what I am trying to handle. And this leads us to what we call implicit bias. Okay? What do we mean by implicit bias? First, we mean bias in the technical sense of our estimations are not good, and particularly estimations that are driving decisions. So our decisions are going to be informed in part, not in full, of course, but in part on wrong signals, signals that are not related to the decision we're going to try to make. And in particular, the most common version of this is we're going to tend to reinforce the common. So if most people I see that have some in some profession have some characteristic, then my brain is going to tend to want to hire more people with that characteristic into that profession because they match my expectations. So I'm going to tend to reinforce the common, and I'm also going to tend to I'm going to tend to select for people like me. So people like me, I'm going to understand better, I'm going to have more experience with, I'm going to have a better understanding of them, I'm going to think they belong better, that they're nicer, kinder, better expressive people. Not because they are, because my brain has better experience understanding them and seeing this in them. Implicit bias is inevitable because you have a working brain. Because you have a brain that is capable of noticing problems in the road and recognizing expressions and seeing what kind of profession people have based on their uniforms and so on, because your brain can do that, it is going to manifest implicit biases. We can't stop them, but we can understand them and try to mitigate them, which is what we'll talk about in the next module of this week's lesson.